Welcome to Bubbles and Books, a podcast about two of the best things in life, books and champagne. Brought to you by Amanda and Ellen, co-owners of your local independent bookstore, Dog Ear Books in Amazon.
First, give me a cheers.
Cheers. And books are sexy.
We actually are prepared this week. We have champagne.
We have champagne, and we have a special guest,
Christy Hegstead. Who came prepared herself because she's a very prepared professional.
She's more
person.
Prepared than us.
She has her own cream soda bubbly because she's responsible and doesn't drink midday. Oh, this smells good. Ellen and I are only semi-professional, so we drink semi.
The only reason we're drinking the champagne right now is for work.
Yeah. We wouldn't be doing it otherwise. Never. Totally. Okay, so what are we drinking today? We have Chandon Demi-Sec, and Rachel knew to warn me because Demi-Sec means semi-sweet. So hopefully we can handle it. We're usually dry champagne drinkers, but this was what was cold and available.
We had limited choices today.
And we wanted cold. We didn't want to have to go next door to the sandwich shop and borrow ice again. Rachel, can I include you? Okay, great. So we've got our bubbles, and we've got our guest. As we said, we have Christy Hegstead. She is a professional and personal coach who reached out to us because we were missing something. We may have had 9 book clubs, but you know what we didn't have? We did not have like a personal wellness book club. And we have a huge readership in this area.
We do.
People who are reading self-help, personal wellness, personal growth books. She said, I think I have a great idea for a quarterly book club. And just like many of our other book clubs go, if someone has the passion and the love, that's how it gets going. Yep. All of our book clubs, with the exception of the official Dog-Eared Books Club, which was an obligation that you needed to fulfill.
Which I have great passion for.
Right.
Don't undermine me.
Every single other one of them has been something that one of our booksellers or one of our customers has come to us and said, I would love to put together this book club. And the passion and desire behind those is what makes them successful. And thus far, you've met once.
Yes.
First quarter. Yep.
Had a great turnout.
Packed house in the loft. And so it really demonstrated that what we assumed was that there was a great readership and desire for a personal wellness or your best self book club. So welcome, Christy.
Thank you very much.
Happy cheers to be here. Cheers to your bubbly, our bubbly.
Yeah. Cheers.
As we do each week, we're going to start by finding out what we're all reading. And Christy, as the honored guest, you want to tell us what you're reading right now?
I will. I even brought them along.
I love
today.
Seeing your
you
stack.
Came in, you rolled in with a whole stack, and we're like, yeah.
And all of her books are book darted. And this is a professional. I'm telling you, she's a professional reader. Yes.
The ones I own are also written in the margins.
Love it.
Not the library books, never. But so I usually have a fiction and a nonfiction going at any given time. So I brought both of them.
Awesome.
My fiction one, excuse me, I'm sure you guys will be familiar with. So that's Hella Beautiful.
I loved Hella Beautiful. What drew you to this book?
I have heard about it so much. You know, it was on so many best of type lists and stuff last year. But I also read Dear Edward, her earlier book when it first came out, and loved it. And I feel I'm probably about halfway through this one, but I'm getting the same feeling as I did with that one, where she just like, you know, like when you read fantasy and there's world building and you get immersed in the world.
Right.
With her, excuse me, I just feel like immersed in the families and the communities and stuff that she builds.
You're highly invested in the relationships.
Yes, yes. So I am loving this one so far.
Yeah, it was one of my favorites of last year, and it made it into our March Fiction Madness bracket.
Okay.
I think it advanced to the Sweet 16. Am I right?
It did.
It advanced to the Sweet 16. Okay. So I'm glad you're loving Hello Beautiful. What is the nonfiction that you're reading? And I see one that I want to read.
Oh, good. Yeah. So a little bit of, I'll give you just a brief moment of context for this one. I don't follow a lot of book prizes really closely, with one exception. I love the Women's Prize for Fiction. I learned about that. I think it's been around since like the 1990s, but I just learned about it maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
And whenever they announce their long list, which is usually, I think, March-ish, late February, March, there's always books on there that I've never heard of, authors I've never heard of. And this year is no exception. There's a lot of new ones on there. But this year, well, and with that, I almost always find one of my favorite books of the year through reading some of those. Mm-hmm. So I've just really, like, I just keep following it just in case there's, you know, something there to spark that. But this year they started the first ever Women's Prize for Nonfiction. It's their inaugural year. And so it's the same thing. Like most of the books, I think there's 16 books on the long list, many of which I had never heard of or, you know, haven't read. So this book is one of their long listed books, and it's called The Dictionary People by Sarah Ogilvie. The subtitle is The Unsung Heroes Who Created the Oxford English Dictionary.
So cool. Such a nerd alert.
Oh my gosh, yes. You have me. If you are a book nerd or a word nerd, yeah. I mean, I'm very, I've just started this one. I'm very towards the beginning, but already a few flags you can
see. I can see it, yeah.
And I think what is like already drawing me in to this one is the, she's talking, like, first of all, I don't know that I've ever really sat down and thought about, like, how did they come up with the dictionary?
Right.
You know, how did they put that together? But then she's talking about, she's very well, like, she's worked in this field for years and very well versed in it and a really engaging writer. And she's describing, like, what we would now call crowdsourcing and how if we had a question about something or wanted people's input on something, you know, you post it on the internet and get the feedback that way. But this is back like in the 1800s that she's talking about. And so like all the mailing that they had to do around the world asking about like, how do you use these words, you know, in context or, you know, just, it's just so interesting already.
That is so cool.
So
yeah, because they wanted it to be authentic and appropriate. And
I mean, it took decades to compile the Oxford English Dictionary.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, I'm only just beginning. I'm, you know, barely started, but I'm already like, this is really cool. So I'm thankful for that prize list to introduce me to this one. But
that's really cool. I did not know that they had nonfiction now.
Yeah. And in fact, well, I think the short list is about to be announced or something like that too. They announced the winners of both, I think, in June at the same time. So,
okay.
Cool. But yeah, try to get a few read before they announce the winners. So
that's awesome.
That is a great resource. Thank you for suggesting it, that the Women's Prize for Fiction would be a place you could turn to as one of your inspirations for reading goals for the year. So check it out, people. Mm-hmm. We'll post a link in the show notes. Ellen, tell me what you're reading.
Well, I am reading two books. The first is The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley.
Yes, welcome to the club.
I really love it so far. I'm like maybe halfway through. And we have talked about it on the podcast before. It's a book that comes out in May. Mariah, one of our booksellers, is very enthusiastic about
it. She will live and die by this book.
She will.
She's made fan art for the author.
Oh, wow. She has. And it's like maybe 30% serial killer vibes. That's what I told her.
Yeah. Like, she's gotta keep it toned down.
Tread carefully, Mariah. You're going to scare her. Anyway, it's so the author has like this letter at the beginning of the book where she sort of explains the inspiration for it, which was like during COVID, she got like really into like polar expeditions, like
studying them,
like learning about polar expeditions. Oh. Mm-hmm. And she kind of like got into this one polar expedition and specifically one polar explorer, Graham mm-hmm. Gore. And so she started writing fan fiction about Graham Gore.
Yeah. Like humorously.
Yeah. And then so that's what spawned the novel. And Graham Gore, Commander Graham Gore, who died in a polar expedition in 1847, is a main character in this story. So in the Ministry of Time, Britain has discovered time travel. It's top secret. And the way they're experimenting with it is they're pulling people out of history, different periods of history, but people who were going to die in their timelines anyway. So they're like maybe in a battle, in a war, or like Graham Gore's, he died on that expedition. So
just in case their time travel doesn't work out and they die, it's like, well, they would have been dead anyways.
Right. So it's like no harm, no foul. So they pull them into the present day timeline, and each person that they pull in from history is assigned a person who's their bridge, who lives with them for a year, who's kind of like a special agent, and their job is to help them like adjust to 21st century life.
Which is harder for some than others.
Yes. Yeah. And so the main character of the book is British, but her mother was a Cambodian refugee. And so she is Graham Gore's bridge. And so they kind of have this banter, like maybe this slow burn romance I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of getting the hots for Graham Gore.
Yeah, Graham seems really sexy.
As I read it.
Look him up. Find his pictures, peeps.
But also, you know, he was playing a part in, you know, British colonialism, imperialism that, you know, adversely affected her family in very profound ways. And so there's this, like, there's these layers of context to this book, and the writing is really, really smart. So it's kind of like, it's time travel, it's romance, it's like a little bit thrillery, I think. I feel like they're starting to uncover that maybe the Ministry of Time is doing some shady shit that it's not supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So that's the first book I'm reading. Mm-hmm. The second book is This Is Not a Book About Benedict Cumberbatch by Tabitha
Carbon. I love your weird backlist pulse. Good job.
And it's nonfiction. And when the author was a young mother, she became obsessed with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Because weird things happen when you're a young mother.
Yeah, she like just got the hots for him. And it kind of turned into an obsession. Mm-hmm. And so this book is about how, you know, like when you're a teenager, like, I don't know about you guys, but when I was a teenager, like my walls were covered with like Hanson posters.
Ellen was a little intense about Hanson and maybe still is.
Yes. You just have this like unadulterated love for like a thing. You know what I mean? I'm just talking about when we're teenagers, we do this, right? But then you, as you, you know, go into womanhood and oftentimes motherhood, you know, like you're told that the things that you're really excited about like aren't cool, or like, you have to sort of like diminish the things that you get excited about. And this is sort of her response to that. Like, you know what? Fuck you all. Benedict Cumberbatch brings me joy. Yeah. And like, we shouldn't diminish the things that bring us joy, even if they're kind of silly or weird. And if I want to put Benedict Cumberbatch posters on my wall and I want to have, you know, a crush on Benedict Cumberbatch and I want to talk endlessly about Benedict Cumberbatch, then you know what? Maybe I should do that.
I would say we have a staff kind of full of people who have these enthusiasms.
Yeah, but it's also like, it's in defense of that. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, that's okay. Like, life was hard. Like, maybe, like, if you find joy in, like, being a Swiftie or something, like, good for you, mm-hmm. Right?
Christy, yeah, do you have your own person. Do you have a nerd alert enthusiasm in your life?
Oh, gosh, probably many.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of something like, I go in, like, phases. For a while, it was Big Bud Press jumpsuits.
Yes.
Yeah, I was really enthusiastic about those.
Yes.
I still am, but, you know, like, my wallet had to take a break.
I mean, I have a Joel Kinnaman mouse pad at work.
Oh, Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
In the heyday, yeah. I was really there. Like, I was like, oh, my God. And now I need to catch up on the movies.
I do too. Yeah.
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 I've had my moments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Puzzling. So,
fun. Yeah. So it's really just, it's very funny, but I think that the subject is serious, right? Because, you know, I think we can probably all relate to like, as
like, let's not conform.
Yeah. Or that like she writes a lot about like young motherhood and when your kids are really little and that you just like lose yourself in it.
Mm-hmm.
And like your whole identity becomes who you are in relation to these other people.
That's how I got into dog training, because I needed something besides.
Yeah.
Is this like a memoir then? Is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, okay, it's like okay. Little like essays. It'll be like, this is not a chapter about obsession. This is not a chapter about fear. This is not a chapter about, and it's very funny, but yeah, it's so good. Yeah,
I really want to know if the author connected with Benedict Cumberbatch over this story.
It would be awkward, some of the things she writes.
I mean,
about him.
Those people like Benedict Cumberbatch have to be used to that level of fandom. Like, you would think they're used to it.
Like, she takes questionnaires like, how obsessed am I? Like, is it a psychological problem?
Yeah, it could be.
It might be. What are you reading? I know what you're reading.
I know. You guys sold me on it last week. Don't tell me anything more because I'm like a third of the way through. How to Solve Your Own Murder by Kristen Perrin. Thank you so much for telling me what a delightful like murder mystery this was. It's like your perfect like TV show murder. Like all the characters are really interesting. You have a strong female protagonist. You described it last week about Frances Adams getting a fortune in her teens that says she will be murdered, essentially. And she becomes obsessed with it over a lifetime. Fast forward to the future, her great niece is told, you are going to be the sole heir of Great Aunt Frances. Come meet with her about this business. But when she gets there, Great Aunt Frances has finally, many decades later, possibly been murdered. And so we must solve the murder. You guys said you read it, you know, almost in a sitting. I, you know, as soon as I picked it up, it's easy. It's going between past and present. So those kind of chapter breaks make it really compulsively readable. And it's just a delight. Like, it's just a little gift of a murder mystery. It's entertaining. I'm excited.
Yeah, it was super fun.
All right.
Awesome. Okay, so let's get started on our topic of the day, which is Christy, basically. Welcome, Christy. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about your, because your interest and your profession led you to create this book club for Dog Eared Books. Tell us, how did you get into professional and personal coaching? Where, what was your life path? How did you get to this place?
Oh, tell gosh, how much time story. Do we have here?
All the time in the world.
Well, let me start by first thanking you for inviting me here and inviting me to be a part of that, your Best Self Book Club, because it has been really fun as we've gotten started. Yeah. So I'm happy to be a part of that. And I love what you're doing with the bookshop and the community that you're creating and everything.
Well, thanks for making it a richer place to be.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, thank you. Yes, so I am a certified executive and life coach. And in a nutshell, like my one sentence blurb of what I do is I really help people. My focus is on helping people work with meaning, live with purpose, and achieve bold and difference-making goals. So what that looks like in practice is I work a lot one-on-one with a lot of people to, you know, help them clarify their vision for what they want their life to look like and what they want their work to look like, or, you know, any aspect of that, their leadership, those kinds of things, really get clear on that vision and, you know, bring in like their core values and their passions and their strengths and things like that, their purpose. And then create a plan for kind of getting from where you are to where you want to be, and partnering with them along the way to, you know, hold, you know, brainstorm together, hold people accountable to their action steps, and really, you know, partner with them to help them move in the direction that they want to be going. So I've always had a passion for kind of what makes people tick and human development. And I've long been, I mean, as long as I can remember, been a goal setter myself and, you know, trying to just be my best self, essentially. And have always loved, as long as I can remember anyway, loved reading about that and, you know, really just love helping people to envision what could be and helping them to get there. So my path into this particular profession, I own a coaching firm called MAP Professional Development, and the MAP in that stands for meaning and purpose.
Cool.
So that's been at the heart of everything all along. And it's, let's see, I started, this has been a little over 21 years now.
That's awesome.
So time sure flies. And prior to that, or what, you know, even when I started the business, it was, I focused a lot on training and writing. So those are kind of the three legs of my business stool, if you will, coaching, training, and speaking and writing. And when I started, I would hold a lot of, you know, classes or training sessions or seminars and things like that. And at the time, you know, I'd have people there that would, you know, we'd wrap up, like it'd be a one session or two session class or something like that. And I'd have people there that would say, this is awesome. You know, what do I do next? And at that time, it was kind of like, well, here's your materials. And I kind of crossed my fingers and say, just go implement or whatever. I didn't have, you know, something in place to help people continue on that path if they wanted to. And so I started learning about coaching, hearing about coaching, and thought, this sounds like the missing link for
the people who are asking for more.
And so I went back and got my coaching certification. This has been several years ago now as well. And from that point, for, I mean, even from day one of my coach training, just felt like I'm at home now. Like, this is kind of pulling everything together. And so from that point forward, have really focused on that aspect. And I love growth myself, you know, like I said, you know, being my best self or striving to be that. And I love helping other people like see their potential and, you know, maybe achieve beyond what they even thought was possible, or to take something, some kind of idea or dream or possibility, and actually like break it down into pieces and make it happen too. So yeah, that was probably a long-winded answer to that question, but it's so fun.
That's so great. You've obviously had professional training in this work, but I know from talking to you that you draw inspiration from writers who have been working in self-help and personal growth for some time. What have been some of the influences that you've really been inspired by that you've incorporated into your coaching work? Like, who are some of the writers or books that have informed your work?
Yeah. This is a great question, and my answer could be different on different days, but there are several staples. In fact, I think about a year and a half ago, I posted a blog that was like 12 of my favorite
non-fiction
professional books.
Yeah, we'll have to link that in the show notes too.
Yeah, I can send you the link. Because it's like, there's no way I can choose one.
Right.
And then even narrowing it down to 12.
I feel you. We know.
I think I posted in that blog too. Yeah, this could be different on a different day. But a couple that stand out, you know, or that I refer back to again and again. A big one is Stephen Covey. He wrote 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Awesome.
So he's probably, you know, most well-known perhaps for that one.
Yep.
But he also wrote, I mean, he had written several books, but one that really spoke to me, I loved 7 Habits, but he also, with a couple of co-authors, wrote a book called First Things First. And that is one of the 7 Habits, but he, you know, they expanded that into a book on its own.
I feel like that's the one I should read, First Things First.
Yeah, and I mean, it's probably, I don't even know how old it is, you know, it's been around for a while, but it's all about, like deciding what matters most and prioritizing and really, you know, discerning that for yourself. And then also like honoring your time around that or designing your time to the extent that you can around that. So that whole, you know, that's a big part of what I do in my work is, you know, how do we not only help you uncover your values and your priorities and what matters most to you and what you want to achieve in a meaningful way, but also how do we do that without just adding to your plate, you know,
right,
or without becoming completely overwhelmed or burned out or exhausted, that sort of thing.
It's kind of about our year of no, where it's really a yes to what matters most at the core.
Yeah.
So it's shaping those decisions and habits around the thing you've identified. Cool.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. So so his work was a big early influence. I think of Mindset by Carol Dweck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mindset is a favorite in our store.
So good. So good. That was when I picked up, it had been around for a little while, I think, by the time I picked it up, but it was one that I was seeing referenced in pretty much every other book that I was reading. So I'm like, I need to find out what this book is about. And it's excellent. I've, talked about that one from the, from a professional perspective, from a parenting perspective, it applies in all different life areas, as well as personally. You know, it really made me think about the fixed and growth mindset and you know, how that shows up for me and that kind of a thing too. So that was a big one. So some of those, trying to think, Cal Newport wrote a book called Deep Work several years ago, and I got to hear him speak at a conference, at a coaching conference, shortly after I think that one was released. So got to kind of hear him introduce it. And then I read it and really like that one. And he is actually, we'll probably get into this a little bit later, but he's the author of our Q2 pick for the Your Best Self Club.
We were so excited when we saw that he had new work coming out.
Yeah. And he, Deep Work was about, you know, a lot about, you'll probably hear a theme that I talk about and I'm drawn to, but a lot about, you know, deciding what matters most for you, you know, a lot of times in the context of work, and then how do we actually like focus on that and the value of paying attention and allowing focus, and how, you know, we have so many distractions at all times that it's hard to actually delve into a topic or a subject or a, you know, an activity or something like that and stay focused for a period of time.
Yeah. And that was Deep Work.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's what that's all about.
You're building me a reading list. Can we take a side tangent? My ADHD brain goes here because I hear you describing these books and I'm like, yes, I should be reading these. I have ADHD troubles. I have a business that Ellen and I own together that really we want to focus on the core, you know, figuring out what our core is and diving deep into it. What are your tips for reading nonfiction? You told me you had them because I have read you know, like you obviously read fiction and nonfiction. You have mm-hmm. a brain for both. I have a really hard time getting all the way through yeah. nonfiction. So what are some of your tips when these really awesome books are in your hands, but maybe there isn't the narrative arc to draw you through?
Yeah, yeah. That's a great question. And I think that's something a lot of people that I've been in conversation with over the years and such bring up too, or maybe, you know, I'm good at starting nonfiction books, yes. but not finishing. Same. Or, you know, that sort of thing. And I, you know, first and foremost, like, maybe you got what you needed from that book in the portion that you read, you know, yeah. and there's value in, you know, sometimes it's like, it's just like if you see a quote or an article or something and it's like, this was the right thing at the right time.
Kind of sure. Thing. Yeah.
But yes, I do have a number of ideas. I've given this some thought.
Teach me.
Tell us.
About nonfiction. Well, and one of the first things I'll say is kind of where I start with everything. And that is, you know, thinking about the why, like why you're picking up the book or right. what you want to gain from that. So I feel like you read with a different perspective when you're kind of clear on what you want to experience with that book. So for example, if you're reading to, because you want something in there to advance your career, mm-hmm. you might read that differently than if you're reading just, I just want to be inspired, or I just okay. want like, you know, a boost of motivation or something okay. like that. Or if you're reading to, you know, move yourself towards a goal, like depending on the why, the purpose of your choice, your book mm-hmm. choice, that could, you know, affect what you're reading mm-hmm. and also your enjoyment and engagement with it. Mm-hmm. So I like to start there. I think another thing is, you know, choosing topics that you are passionate about or that you enjoy. I mean, that might kind of sound like a no-brainer, but sometimes just giving that some thought can be, you know, it can kind of lead you down different paths. So like, for example, I think it was maybe 2 years ago, I had set a mileage goal for myself for walking and running. Like I wanted yeah. to run a certain number of miles in the year. And so while I was doing that, I was intentionally at different times throughout the year listening to different audiobooks while I was walking
right.
that were kind of on that topic. So like one of them was The Joy of Movement by Kelly McGonigal.
Okay.
She talks about, I mean, it's exactly what the title sounds like yeah. finding joy in exercise and in movement and in community around that and stuff. And it was such a delightful listen while I was walking that like
it
if
made
I
it
intended
extra
to,
beneficial.
Yeah. yeah. So if I wanted to go for like a 3 mile walk or something, I would, you know, go 4 or 5 because I wanted to keep listening to the book a lot of the times.
What a great plug for audiobooks, BTW.
Yeah, yeah exactly. So, you know, if you're passionate about whether it's like a personal or professional passion too, you know, if it's around goal setting, there's tons of books around goals. If you love Christmas, you know, you can like look into the history of Christmas or mm-hmm. look into unique traditions about Christmas around the world or things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's another one, another idea. Another thought that came to me this morning too was, if there are fiction authors that you really love, check to see if they have nonfiction also. Mm-hmm. Last year, one of my favorite nonfiction reads of the year was These Precious Days.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah.
And I've read most, if not all, of her fiction work and yes. some of her other nonfiction too. But anyway, my point is, you know, if you have read some of her fiction and you love her writing style and, you yeah. know, her.
It sounds familiar from the very start. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And you might not realize that some of these fiction authors have also delved into nonfiction too. Barbara Kingsolver is another one yeah. I read. I mean, this has been years and years ago, but Animal Vegetable Miracle was a nonfiction one that she wrote. And she's such a compelling storyteller that you're reading her nonfiction. I mean, like with a lot of these, you're reading yeah. it and you feel like you're
reading
just
fiction.
Along for the story. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anthony Doerr is one I think of. Oh. He has 4 Seasons in Rome and he has another as well that I can't remember, but he okay. wrote All the Light We Cannot See.
Yes. Yes.
Very, very popular. Mm-hmm. Cloud Cuckoo Land, which I loved. And so, yes, when you start their nonfiction, you're already familiar with their yeah. tone and you're drawn through.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cool.
Yep. Yeah. Another one kind of speaks to the book club idea too, is to actually talk about the books, you know, so yeah. whether that is through a book club context, and I mean, for every book club that I've facilitated and so forth, I always say, come, and this counts for the Your Best Self book club too, like come even if you haven't read the book, because there will, you'll be fully able to participate in the conversation regardless. I mean, we're talking about things like, you know, being our best selves. Yeah, so there's always something to contribute. And also if you want to come and not talk, like if you want to listen quietly and engage, yeah, that's totally fine. Like all are welcome. But having those conversations, I think, or having even those conversations scheduled. So if it's a book club, if it's a buddy read, like something you're reading with, you know, somebody else who's also reading the same book, and maybe you check in with each other by text every Friday to say, you know, did you get your chapter done, or what'd you think of this chapter, or something. But something that kind of maybe provides a bit of a deadline, but also that that conversation around it. So you're, you know, you're actually hearing those different perspectives, and like what you were saying, you know, sometimes everybody gets something different out of different books that they read, whether fiction or nonfiction. And so those conversations can be huge. So if you've got something like that lined up, or if you're wanting to read nonfiction, you know, I've worked with a lot of people over the years who say, like, I want to read more nonfiction, but I, you know, just for whatever reason, I'm not getting around to it, or that sort of thing. And so sometimes, if it's like, well, in a couple of months, we're going to talk about this book, maybe start with that, or, you know, a book that's related, or maybe that leads you to a different book and you can come and talk about that. I think that's always motivating too. So a couple other quick things I'll say. This idea is of designating certain times for nonfiction can sometimes be helpful. Like I know a lot of people who they will choose like something inspirational and they'll read that in the morning when they're having their coffee or something like that.
Yeah.
So they're getting a bit of nonfiction in on a daily or weekly basis or something like that. And then maybe, you know, I almost always have a fiction and a nonfiction going, and then often, you know, an audiobook and like some other things going too, like you guys. And a lot of times I will like read nonfiction when I have pockets during the day, like at lunch or, you know, when I'm driving to an appointment or something like that. And then fiction I'll read before bed, or I'll reserve that for, you know, after classic hours or something. But so sometimes just having like that designated time, or maybe it's like, you know, you decide on Sunday afternoons, that's going to be my day. You know, I'm going to sit out on the deck for an hour or something like that with my nonfiction book. And just having kind of that designated time can sometimes, you know, help prepare you for it and kind of prime you for it. And also make it seem, you know, a little bit more, maybe even a little bit more special or something like that too, because you're, you know, you've got some time set aside for it. So
very intentional and visualized.
So those are a few things I would say. You know, another one, I guess, that maybe many people do already, but, you know, reading like memoirs or biographies or something like that about people that you admire or you know, want to learn more from, or how they got to where they are. There's so much of that out there now, and hearing that, you know, particularly when it's in their own words, I think can be really profound. And that's, I love memoirs on audiobook. Like if I'm listening to an audiobook, a lot of times that's, you know, it'll be
a
memoir too.
It feels so intimate.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's the author reading it too.
I will say that, as you know, thinking about the list of tips that you've given, I have historically chosen audiobooks for more challenging reads.
Okay.
So when I would pick like a Man Booker award winner, Booker Prize winner, oftentimes they have a more unusual storytelling format, or are slightly more challenging. And the one I always think of is Milkman. Milkman was about Ireland during the Troubles, and growing up as a teenager during that time period, and certain gender expectations around being a girl during that time. And she was quite, the protagonist was quite maligned for walking and reading. Everyone thought that this was a great problem, that she would just walk through town while reading. and it had a very, stream of consciousness storytelling format. So like, you know, something that I find more challenging, sometimes it's an audiobook, I'm able, you know, to be better guided through it. So I think that is a really good tip.
Yeah. I do know a lot of people who, agree or have that same sentiment, or prefer nonfiction in general on audiobook. Mm-hmm. I tend to be, with the exception of memoirs, kind of the opposite, because as you can see, I like to delve in. So a lot of times I'll even start a book on audio, like a personal development or professional development type book. and I'll be, you know, trying to either, like, if I'm walking or something, or like screenshotting, you know, so I can go back and listen to that
bookmarking,
page or whatever, or bookmarking. And then I end up, you know, purchasing the hardcover book or whatever.
Right, you need that upper level of interaction with it.
Yeah, but I love memoirs on audio. And for, you know, audiobooks too. And, you know, along those lines too, if you're currently not reading any nonfiction, maybe just challenging yourself to read, like, I want to read one nonfiction book. And then, you know, whether that's you set aside, you know, 10 pages a day or, you know, a chapter a week or something like that. And by the end of the year or whenever, you know, if you're able to say, I read a nonfiction this year and last year I didn't read any. And then you can, you know, continue building on that too. And there's so much value in fiction also. There's, you know, we just get different things from different
books. Yeah, you can get really well done, like historical fiction or well-researched fiction that draws in really, like, I think of Changing All Stars, the way that book brought in information about our incarceral system, and that, you know, how we operate with the prison system in America. And you learned while also being engaged in a fictional narrative. Those are some of my, I love to learn my nonfiction information through well done fiction.
Well, that's awesome. And then that can also lead you down the path of a nonfiction book. So you can kind of see, like, what was the facts of this and what was the part that the author, you know, created in their own mind. And and that can be a great
pathway. Have readers in our store. Like my brother-in-law is one of them. He hates reading fiction because if he reads about something, he can't say with authority what was true or not true. Yeah. So he's like, just give me, just give me the nonfiction version of this topic, please, so that I can speak with authority on what was true or not. I like the gentle introduction. Like, I read Horse by Geraldine Brooks. It was about Lexington, the greatest horse, racehorse that ever lived. And it's kind of got lost to history during the Civil War period, but then was rediscovered, more recently. And then we have another book in our history section called Lexington about that horse.
Okay. Yeah,
so it's a fun way to pique your interest and then learn more. And I have found that that's my favorite way to do it.
Okay.
Get clued in. So tell us about the books that you've been picking that have been the inspiration for your Best Self Book Club. What did you start out with? And what are you looking forward to reading throughout this year, 2024, your best self year.
Let's make it the best self year. So we're meeting quarterly, like you said. And the first quarter we read Hidden Potential by Adam Grant.
Have you read Adam Grant before?
Yes. I love Think Again. And I've read a couple others of his as well. He is a really, for all of them that I've read so far for the Best Self Book Club, just really engaging writers and can weave in, you know, I love it when they weave in like different examples or different stories from either people that, like in Adam Grant's case, he's a professor. So sometimes he'll talk about like different students that he's worked with or different, you know, people at his college or even his own life. And he even, like in Hidden Potential, he has different cartoons and things like that in there, you know, so it's there's a little something for everyone. And this book, so it's interesting because for three of the four book clubs this year, I haven't read the book in advance. You know, we've
that's cool. You're learning alongside.
So it's, so it's been fun. Like for this one, when we did meet back in January, it was fun to be in that same situation as everyone else. Like it was new to me. And so we were all talking about it from that perspective. So that was really fun. And this book, Hidden Potential, is really, I mean, the title gives a lot, but he really talks about how we all have, you know, abundant potential and how sometimes like different obstacles that come along our life path or things that get in the way of that. And so he provides, I think one of the things I'm drawn to in particular in personal professional development books is not only the you know, like the insight or the backstories that shared and the research and that kind of a thing, but also putting it in a practical context. Like now that I know this, what can I do about it?
Right.
And whether the author does that or whether, I mean, that's kind of the lens I read through.
Right.
So like when I said earlier about my coaching work, you know, a big part of that is like helping people uncover their core values and bring those to life to, you know, see how they show up in different aspects of life. One of my core values is growth. And so whenever I'm reading, particularly personal and professional development type books, I'm reading through that lens of like, what can I apply, you know, in my own life? Or what can I apply? What can I share with my clients? What can I talk with my kids about? What can I, you know, talk to my friends about, you know, these kinds of things too, so that I can continually be growing and continually supporting other people in the growth that they want to experience too. Hidden Potential is a great, you know, great resource for that because he just gives so many different examples and stories. And then also like, here's how we can start putting this into action. Or here, you know, if you are working with people and you want to help them reach their full potential or uncover their hidden potential, here are some things we can do. And so that was such a great part of the discussion when we met in January too, because we had people there from, you know, all different life experiences and different work experiences and all of that. But these books provide, you know, these are things that we're all faced with or that we're all looking to maybe enhance in our lives or learn more about or work with our students or our clients or our children or whatever about too. So so that was a great one to kick it off. That just came out last fall, I think, and a very good book. So for quarter two, we are reading Slow Productivity.
The cover is so good.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah, it's a great cover. Yes.
It just brings you peace looking at it. Okay, it's like a forest scene with a little like cabin up on the on a mountainside. It's gorgeous. Yeah. Check it out.
I have, I think my latest, probably, well, depending when this is out, but I have an Instagram post where I held this book up. I was out at Sailorville on a walking trail. So I held it out and took a, I'm the person taking pictures of my books while I'm out on the nature trail. The subtitle of this is The Lost Art of Accomplishment Without Burnout. So that's really the crux of it here.
It's the balance between identifying those hidden potentials, but how can you chase it without burning yourself out?
And it pairs nicely, I think, with Hidden Potential as well as with Deep Work, which we talked about a few minutes ago. Just really, and this is, you know, he talks about, again, a lot of different ideas, a lot of different examples, like from history, from current day. You know, there's examples in here from where he's sharing stories about like Alanis Morissette and Lin-Manuel Miranda and, you know, different like people in the current day and how they, you know, like some of these people, at least as I was reading it, I was thinking, you know, we might look at some of these people and think, oh, they were such an overnight success.
Right.
And like he goes a little bit more into their stories about, you know, here's what was happening behind the scenes or here's, you know, some things that they did that maybe took a lot longer than you had originally thought. And then also, gives ideas to put into practice too for how to, still be productive. I often say like the people that I work with, the kind of term that I use a lot of times is meaningful achievers because they're people who want to do great things or achieve goals or, you know, things like that, but in a meaningful way, not just in a like hustle, harried, frenzied type of way. So when I saw this book too, I mean, that just kind of speaks to my soul in so many different ways in addition to the cover. But that whole idea that you can accomplish meaningful things and you can also like rest in there or, you know, like go about it in a way that
you don't have to be all or nothing.
So
And it's, I think it's part of a broader conversation we've been having about like work-life balance, you know, like, you know, just how do you, you know, it's, I think it's important to, be productive, be ambitious, have goals, but also like live your life.
Absolutely.
And like be okay. And I think I think it's a really interesting topic. I kind of want to read it.
So, and it's a pretty quick read. You know, there's a lot of references in the back here too. That's another, like, just as a side note, another tip for if people are wanting to read more nonfiction is that if you do find a book that you love, usually nonfiction books will have a pretty hefty reference list or appendix or something in the back. And that can be a great way to look and see if there's something, you know, like, oh, that actually sounds similar to what I just read. So I want to, you know, go check that book out. Or, you know, the authors that are blurbed on the back. And a lot of times that can lead you to another book too. But yeah,
those are really good tips, not to underestimate those. Because I mean, I certainly, when I was researching like microdosing mushrooms, like one book led to another book, reading about ADHD in adults and women, one book blurbed by or a foreword by a particular person cued me into that person, and it leads you on this path of discovery and who's influenced who, and kind of get to the great root and source of the wealth of information out there on a topic.
Yeah. And you realize that there is, in most cases, there is a wealth of information out there or ideas, which can also be overwhelming too, and it's like, well, where do I start? So, but that, some of the things we talked about before, I think can help with that. Where do you start?
Yeah.
So, so this is a really good one. Yeah. You can see all my little
I'm excited to talk about this one. Yeah. And when does the book club meet for the discussion of slow productivity?
This one is April 24th.
Cool. So you still have time. Yeah. You can pick it up in the store and join in on this awesome conversation. I know it's definitely one I'm interested in reading.
Yeah.
And then what do you have planned for the rest of the year?
I was just looking. It's just a little over 200 pages, actually. So
which
it's,
is a perfect length.
Yep. Yeah, that's very doable.
Yeah. Yep. So for quarter three, we'll be reading one that I have not read yet, but I think sounds super interesting. It's The Well-Lived Life. Let me check. The author is Gladys McGarry.
Okay.
The subtitle of that one is A 102-year-old doctor's secrets to health and happiness at every age.
I love that balance because, you're kind of doing mindset type things with the first two books, productivity, business mining, goal setting, and then kind of this return to like wellness of the body. I mean, that's what Best Self is about. It's, mental, physical, professional, all layers of wellness.
Yeah.
That sounds so cool.
That one sounds really interesting. And that will meet in July. So I thought, I'm planning to read that in the summer. I think that'll be a good summer read.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea. I haven't read it yet, obviously. But I'm looking forward to that. And I love reading from different perspectives, whether that's different ages, different professions, different races, all just there's so much value in that broad reading experience. So I'm excited to read hers. And then the fourth quarter one.
This one you love. This is one you love.
This is a very flagged book.
This one is The Perfectionist's Guide to Losing Control by Catherine Morgan Schaeffler, subtitled A Path to Peace and Power. I love that experience. I know you guys have experienced this too, where you're going into a book thinking, I'm probably going to like this. And then where you're just like, you close the book and just like, I absolutely adore this book. I want to go back and reread it immediately.
Yeah.
And this one just kind of took me by surprise in that aspect. I didn't know anything about it. I think I had randomly seen it. I don't even know how I first heard about the title, but I'm like, it just sounds interesting for whatever reason. And I checked it out from the library. My library had it. So I checked it out the next day. Started reading it, and not only was I putting tabs in here, but I was like, well, I want to write some things in the margin, which I will never ever do in a library.
Right.
So I drove to Dog-Eared Books and picked up the hard copy to own it.
Thank you so much. Well,
thank you. Yeah. And obviously got a lot out of it. This book, so the author is a therapist, and so she works with a lot of people with perfectionist tendencies, and so she is talking, I don't even know where to start with this one because there was so much in here that I just wasn't expecting. I mean, so many topics that she addresses in not an overwhelming way. It's a little bit longer of a book than Slow Productivity, but you can read it in chunks and she breaks it out beautifully and it's just got a beautiful flow to it. But it's so, whether you consider yourself a perfectionist or not, I think you could almost interchange the title with achiever or goal oriented person, or, there's so many things that apply to
hard worker.
Yeah. To, so many of us, I think. So, but just filled with, practical tips. And then she touches on so many examples of dialogue in here, for example, that she would share where I would read it and be like, that is like a thought from my head that has been put onto paper. kind of a thing. So you can feel really, if you relate to some of the aspects in here, which I feel like there's just a little something for everyone in here in many ways, or for many anyway. It talks about, things like burnout and grief. And I mean, just so many different topics brought into this. And so many different, like the kind of premise of this is, instead of thinking of perfectionism as a flaw that you need to fix, what if you embraced it? What if you leaned into that and thought about how, like, your perfectionist tendencies, or those achiever tendencies or ambition or whatever, you know, however you want to describe that, how that actually can help you live your best life, and mm-hmm. how that, you know, that can help you, like, you can, it's not something to like be embarrassed about or shy away from or something like that, but how can you actually bring it into the whole?
Yeah, in a healthy way.
So, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this will be in October, I believe, when we talk about this one for the Best Self Book Club. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love the cover of it too. It's a cool looking book.
Yeah, it's very simple, but beautiful. And yeah. So those are 2024 Best Self Book Club books.
Well, considering how widely you read and how well informed you are in this area of study, I mean, you've brought us great curation to this book club, and what a great person to lead book club conversation from the context of how you've helped coach people in their own lives, in their own professions, personal lives. What a gift that book club is. So thank you.
Thanks for doing it. We're so excited to be offering it.
Such a pleasure. And I love that, you know, the conversations that come from that too, like how there really is something for everyone. And yeah, thinking about not only reading the books and what we learn, but also like, where do I go from here with this information? What change can I make? What action can I take? So that's fun.
Well, to learn more about Dog-Eared Books book clubs, you can go to Dog-Eared Books Ames, go to the book club tab on our homepage. To learn more about Christy's work, you can go to ChristyHegstad.com. We'll link it in the show notes. But this great wealth of information here. We'll be sure to reference your 12 favorite authors as well. You know, these four books could be your four nonfiction books to read for the year.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
And thanks for all the tips on nonfiction reading. I think that's like so valuable.
Yeah. Oh, my pleasure. And thank you so much for having me and talking books. I mean, I could sit here for another few hours, I'm sure. So
with that, I'd love to tell you what's popping on our shelves this week.
What's popping?
I have read both of these. I feel very proud to be able to say this. Now, I haven't read the first one to completion. The first book that I want to tell you about is Table for Two by Amor Towles. Amor Towles
is
one of my literary crushes. Gentleman in Moscow is a favorite. Worlds of Seville. I mean, everything he writes is exceptional, unique, amazing. So this is a little bit of a diversion for him. It is a collection of stories that's slightly tied to the worlds of his novels.
Oh, cool.
Table for Two primarily takes place in New York in the 1920s and on. And it's stories about unique characters with unique stories.
He has great characters.
Yeah, he has great character development. It is, if you enjoy short stories, this is perfect. It's a fat volume. This is not a slim collection. So you really, you know, sometimes with stories, you get just this tidbit of a short story and you wish you could get a little bit more. He's not cheating you on these stories. My favorite of the stories from the collection thus far that I've read is about an aspiring writer who just can't sit down to do the work. Instead, he goes to the public library, the New York Public Library, and he studies the work of great authors that he wish he was. And in his procrastination from writing his own work, he starts practicing writing the great writers like Fitzgerald's signature. And he practices it again and again and again. And a used book dealer is sitting across from him one day and notices him doing this. And he says, oh, you know, you love great works. You know, I am a used book dealer, a specialty used book dealer, and I'm in need of a bookseller. And it becomes apparent he probably doesn't actually need a bookseller. His business is very slow. He has a semi-rundown shop. But what he's recruited this guy for is his ability to immaculately recreate the great writers' signatures. Because those signed first editions are going to make him a mint. So it's about a young man who wants to be an author who slowly gives in to the corruption of forging signatures. Love it. Super fun. Next up, popping this week, is The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. Right? You think I'm saying Gramazio? Gramazio. Holly Gramazio. She is a British writer who has written a book about a young woman.
I love this book. It's really fun.
Thank you for thinking that. I read it and I was like, this is it. I love it. And I always get excited when, like, when I catch up to one of the books you've read or you catch up to one of the books I've read and that we actually agree on it. I'm like, this is why we're in business together.
We agree on, I think we agree on most books.
98%. Yeah. So we both enjoyed this one. Do you remember character names much better? Who's our protagonist? Do you remember her name?
No.
Okay, I'm going to look
it up. I just read it too, so I should remember
it. Ellen's really good. Okay, it takes...
Lauren. Is it Lauren?
Let's see. Lauren.
Yes!
See? She kills it. Lauren is a, like, mid-early 30s.
Yeah, and so she's, like...
Single.
She's single, and she comes home one night. She's at her friend's bachelor, her best friend's bachelor party.
She's a little buzz.
And she walks in, and this random dude is in her apartment, and he's like acting like he knows her, and she's like, "What the hell?" And he claims to be her husband, and she thinks that he's an intruder.
And because she's been at a bachelorette party, he's able to roll with her odd behavior. Like, you're drunk. Yeah, fall asleep on the couch. Come on. Yeah,
he's like, okay, you're not really going to call the cops. And so she, like, has her phone. And then when she goes to call the cops, she realizes that, like, the wallpaper on her phone is a picture of her and this guy. And it's, like, clear that they're in a relationship.
She checks on their texts.
Yep.
She's like, oh, we're obviously married.
And then as she starts to look around the apartment, there are subtle differences, like, in the decor, whatever. So she doesn't know what's happening. Well, eventually the guy goes up to the attic to get something. And when he comes back down, it's a different guy. And so what she figures out is that every time her husband goes up into the attic, a new one comes down.
A new husband.
A new husband.
With varying degrees of, like, improvement, or...
Some of them are great and some of them are not so great.
And it goes on and on.
I mean, she goes through a lot of husbands.
A lot. It's really funny. Like, so just can to you try to get the box?
Yeah, think of ways to get them to go up to the attic, or to keep them away from the attic if she likes them.
Mm-hmm.
But this idea that you can just, like, keep exchanging your life, or, like, maybe hold out for something better. And over time, right, she has to sort of, like, figure out, do I, at a certain point, I'm just going to have to, like,
commit
to a relationship. And either, like, get divorced the real way if it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, just choose the person that is here in front of me.
And I think it's definitely an exploration of that whole idea of, like, missed chances, regrets. Grass is always greener. Will this be the right choice? I mean, I don't envy. I married my high school sweetheart. I picked one and I was done. Okay. And the idea of committing in this day and age with infinite choices and online dating and with the high rate of divorce, you know, am I making the right choice? Is this the best that I can do? Having this idea of the best, is it the best version? Or whether you make the best of what you have.
Yeah.
So it's really
and it's a very funny book. It's a very, very funny book. It's a very smart book.
And it is heartfelt as well.
Yeah.
So highly recommend it. Also has a killer cover. And that's what's popping this week.
All right.
So with that, keep the champagne flowing.
And the books going. And the bubbly.
And the books going. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform so you never miss an episode. And for more Dog-Eared Books hijinks, follow us on Instagram @DogEaredBooksAmes or on TikTok @DogEaredBooks.